How many leagues? I mean, what's your winning percentage, or how do you do in these leagues? I mean, I suspect that you're like a very good fantasy football player. Like, are you always in the playoffs, always in the finals type of
There's
situation?
no way she doesn't take this seriously
Course not.
across the board.
Au contraire, mon frère. I hit the point where I'm in too many leagues, so I can only take some of them seriously. And the one I definitely take seriously is the ESPN War Room League.
Oh, God.
I would love nothing more than to be the Cinderella who comes into this league
First of
and
all,
immediately makes it to the
I want to
finals.
know where that French is from. Like, what state or region,
Yeah, why
continent
did
do
you
they
just
speak
turn
French like
into
that?
Gambit? Yeah,
And
the bad
also,
Gambit.
French.
of the leagues that you take seriously, like, I suspect that you're always
Jesse
top four,
Cameron.
right?
No, I mean, stuff
Really?
happens. Like my dynasty league, I lost Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, Robert Tonyan. Like, it's football.
Man,
But
I
this
don't like this. I don't
the
like this.
ES.
I've cooked up this image in my mind of you dominating all fantasy leagues, and I want that
No.
to live. How you doing in
We
this
are
one?
zo
Oh,
No,
no, seriously.
we're zooming right past Dominique, the reality that Mina is in this ESPN
Right.
War Room
That's the most
League,
important
where she
league.
says that she wants to be Cinderella. And you know who probably wants there to be a lot of Cinderellas in this league? Is her fellow manager in this league, Rex Ryan.
Fellow manager
There's
makes
a
it seem like they
lot.
manage one team. They are
Yeah,
not.
we don't. We're not.
Yeah.
Rex didn't make it to the playoffs, also. So,
Rex's team is garbage. Say it. He's bad.
for for those who are just tuning in now, we were talking about how in a tight showdown with Louis Riddick, who is very good at fantasy football and definitely takes it seriously. And I threw out to Twitter last night the truth, actually, which was I was toggling between Hardman, Mecole Hardman, and Marquez Callaway, and at the last second, I went back to it, which worked out. Anyways, we should talk about the football and not my fantasy team.
We are
Nobody
talking about
cares.
football. I
Yeah,
wonder
for the
if
record,
Lou Riddick
did we
puts
just
his fantasy record on his resume every year when he's up for a GM job every year. If he's like, you know what, in the War Room League, your boy's
That's
doing
right.
pretty good.
The Jaguars just got a new screenshot from our pal Louis Riddick.
The
Yeah. And by the way, for the record, like we're just gonna also zoom past my whole glass slipper, translucent shoe, Rex Ryan foot joke. No one
That
wants
was
yeah, I didn't.
th no,
Acknowledge
there
that. I
there
didn't like it. Is
that
that
was like
obvious? You guys get it?
a stretch of epic proportions
Yeah.
there to get to the Cinderella thing. Yeah. Let's talk about the game.
I guess. What do you want us to do first, Alabaster?
Pablo and Dominique, can you please tweet out the link to the
I
show so
did.
people will watch?
I did.
All right,
I
just
don't do the
fine.
show for people.
Fine.
I do the show for me. So I'm watching. That's all that matters. And
Pablo,
I retweeted it.
you can send out the foot joke and see if the people like it there.
They don't.
No one will like it there.
Ooh,
Hopefully,
I'm gonna
people
make
are
a
only
poll.
tuning in now so that they
They
miss
missed
the foot
it.
joke and that they're tuning in time to hear us talk about whatever the first topic
You
is,
really want
Charlie.
to get to this topic, Mina. You're in such a football hurry. Don't bring that NFL Live energy over here to us. This is a more relaxed setting.
You
That's
know what?
right.
You're trying to get us in. You're
No.
probably going to drop some stats
No.
and analytics.
I
Save that for
know.
your other
Ugh.
friends. We
Ugh.
are your dumb
Meanwhile,
friends. We're your dumb
yeah,
it's
friends.
called te hey, it's called tempo and it works.
I'm
right,
tweeting
guys.
out, did you already miss my foot joke? Yes or no at the poll, followed by, if not, did you like my foot joke? Yes or no.
There
Don't
you
do
go.
that. It's not
All right,
gonna go well
Pablo.
for you.
All right,
You got
guys,
the
you ready
green
to go?
arrow. All
I'm
right.
gonna
guess.
Okay,
I
so
guess.
Pablo and Dominique, got a question for you on this one. What was the big story coming out of last night's football game? Patrick Mahomes or Brandon Staley being too aggressive?
Why did you say Pablo and Dominique? This is what I want to know.
Because he
Because we
knows that
love
we're gonna
talking
give you the good
about
stuff.
this topic
I
in
mean,
a serious way.
I feel like Mina's gonna suck the fun out of it, so I'm gonna beat her to ruining this topic by wondering, do we know what happened with Parham yet? Like, is he okay? Are we gonna get an update at some point? Does anybody know? That's
Yeah,
I
let's get right to the
out of a football
existential on
I
your
just
bingo
looked it
card,
up.
existential already
No,
checked off.
no
Concern
updates there. Absolutely
of this
brutal
sport.
way to start that game. And we should come back to it at the end of this topic.
So for me, the answer is obviously the Brandon Staley thing.
Really?
And it's because, well, it's because of how everyone immediately began to turn this into the culture war, which continues to do one thing and one thing only, I think, for nerds like myself, who aren't even all that nerdy compared to the new nerds who know all the nerdy stuff way better than I do. It makes a nerd feel subversive. Like, we're in a world where Amazon and Facebook and Silicon Valley, they've taken over the world, right? Finance has internalized all of the analytic movement. Sports has already done this. The war is over. But if you want to make us feel like an underdog, try to stuff us into a locker. It makes me feel kind of rebellious, honestly, at this point. Because otherwise, look at Las Vegas. They're just making bank because of the things that you call spreadsheets derisively. So thanks for that. I like feeling a little brave.
So are we going to get a Revenge of the Jocks movie? Is that what's going to happen now? Are you implying that the nerds have won, the world is in control of the nerd, is being controlled by the nerds, and now the jocks are the underdogs? Is that what you're implying? Or I guess not implying, out saying?
Well, oh yeah, Mike Lombardi is going to be accusing other people of stuffing him into lockers. Yeah, who else is on the hit list of guys who absolutely hated all of this meetup?
To that point, before we get to the actual substance of the decisions here and whether they were good decisions, I actually think the sands have sort of shifted in this culture war when it comes to football, because the coaches are actually much more aggressive than the majority of people who are talking football on TV during the games. However, there's also the internet conversation, which I think is more in line with the coaches. So it's hard to identify like who actually has the biggest megaphone in all of this when it comes to these things and like how much the role of analytics in football. But I want to say there was a moment last week where John Harbaugh talking about his decision to go for two was juxtaposed with the commentary on a CBS show. And that was a real like light bulb moment for me when I realized like, the coaches are better at talking about this stuff than us. Us meaning like people on television talking about football. We are behind the football community. And I think that is kind of weird, frankly. But as far as the football of it all, Dominique, I'll just tee you up. I'll start. I think the important thing here is to not look at this through the lens of the results and also not in a single game sample. The Chargers have the record they do because they've been aggressive all year long. It's why they won the last Chiefs game, arguably. It's why they won the Browns game. They were successful in the Raiders game. But unfortunately, this only becomes a debate topic when teams fail. The next day after teams go for it, don't ask, should teams go for it? And are analytics good for football? It's only when it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I would obviously I agree with everything you said, except for the part where you're kind of embarrassed that we are behind the coaches. We should be. We are like, why is that? I'm proud of them for finally, and it's not all of them, to be fair, but it's some of them who have finally accepted this and moved in this direction. Like, this is what's best for their careers. This is what's best for the teams. This is what's best for them financially. This is what's best for the players. That's what they should have been doing all along. They figured it out, and yes, please go ahead. I think it is sad that there are people in media who don't understand the full range of how, or don't understand how these things actually work. But I also do think that there is an emotional element to all jobs that has to be weighed. And I do think that that's part of it that we don't know and we don't understand. And I think Brandon Staley, his team believes in him. And they understand and trust him. And that's ultimately, like, if you're going to make any argument against this, you can't make an argument that's based on fact, because the facts, like, obviously land on the argument on the side of going forward in many situations. You will make an argument on, like, game flow and emotion and knowing your personnel, how good your kicker is, how good your quarterback is. All of those things matter. And it's much harder to calculate those things based on big overarching statistics that take into account everything in the history of the game.
Along those lines, the human factor of all. So after the game, Keenan Allen said, yeah, I love it. Let's go for it. Put it in our hands. To which, you know, I think I reply, yes, of course an offensive player wants to go for it. I also think they do believe in Staley and they bought in. But I want to have defense because, I think it's – something that doesn't get brought up a lot enough is the role of field position in all of this. And outside of one decision, which was at the end of the half, most of Brandon Staley's decisions came when they were close, when they were deep in Chiefs territory. A- as a defensive player, do you think that also affects how you view this? No, well, even if it's a turnover on downs, they're so backed up. If we get the stop here, our team can, again, get back on the field and get pretty good, you know, have a pretty good opportunity to score.
Well, way back in the dark ages when I played, that was something that we talked about even before we fully accepted analytics, is when we had guys back there, us on the defense, we knew that if we were not able to convert in those situations, it's fine because we're going to get the ball back in short field and provide short field position. Unfortunately, last night it seemed like Mahomes was able to dig them out of that on a number of different occasions. I think the first drive came off
first
a fourth
drive,
down stop.
Yeah.
It was a long drive. But that,
although
that
tends did not end to happen. With multiple drops, right? So, but yeah, you're right, 100%. Yeah. That doesn't usually happen. You like that, and that one drive, but other than that, they
I think that
got stops.
When people get caught up on talking about this, it's when they think about the fourth down situation as one play and not think about it in the entire game. Again, the one right before halftime, like that's worthy of being criticized. Like,
100%.
Get those points. But the other ones, it's like a field goal is a good result. A touchdown is a great result. Fourth down and turning the ball over on the 5-yard line, that's a fine
line, yeah.
That's a fine result because it's an awesome situation to put your defense
100%.
And special teams in.
But I do think there is this real, and we'll get back into the football like specifics of this. I do feel like all of this is occurring, though, in this framework where the other side of the argument plays the results. Not only because it is impossible to convince human beings, it turns out, to value process over result. I have been trying to sell people a slogan along those lines for years. Hasn't worked. But even more than that, it's the fact that, hey, we should get our time for a parade too. You guys are going to spike the football when this stuff goes right. When it goes wrong, we don't want to hear, we jocks don't want to hear about probability. Because probability just means that we can't criticize stuff based on outcome, which is the entire reason I think sports provides an emotional safe haven for a lot of people, is because they get to do that very thing specifically.
Can I dig through all of Pablo's foolishness and give you one good point? Because, well, first, the first point I'll make is, even if the nerds won, it's clear that you're still a nerd because you don't even know how to win. Like, you still are, you won. Why are you trying to pile on? And to a point that you're making that
Royal
I
Royal you, obviously not me specifically,
no, you,
but you broadly.
You. No.
Like
you.
The Vesotros,
you.
Plural you
no,
in Spanish.
No.
Yeah.
Two. I do
Ustedes?
Think that, yeah, stop. You are a problem, a menace for this program. I do think that the people who are the crowd that we've imagined that we're here arguing with, even though they're not here, they do not respond when they're wrong in the same way that I think that the analytics community responds. So, like, if you go for it on fourth down and you fail, most of us who, like, believe in analytics, like, it was the right decision. But when the people on the other side of this argument that pop up every now and then and cherry pick their opportunities, when their team goes for it or a team goes for it and converts and succeeds, they don't pop up and say, man, that was the wrong decision. Like, that to me is the
yeah,
part of the
right.
reason why I feel comfortable in the position that I'm in, is because I can feel like I support those. They pop up and they're like, oh, yeah, he had the right feeling. He just had a good feeling at that. Like, I don't know. Those things are hard.
Yeah, or the play call, right?
Yeah, good
I mean, they'll
call.
Focus on excellent play call and execution when it's successful. When it fails in this case, we don't talk about the play call. Which, by the way, the play calls were actually good on the Chargers' fourth downs. It was just
it.
Drops, tips by legend Sam Daniel Sorensen. It really does come down to multiple factors. And I think the reality is, if the Chargers had kicked field goals and, you know, still lost, we would again be doing, you can't kick field goals against the Chiefs, and it's all very results oriented.
People still believe
I think,
that, by the way, which is weird.
Yeah, well, that is, I think, worth diving into here, which is, how aggressive do you need to be against Kansas City? And I think that's a shifting question. I think in the second half, after the Chargers lost Derwin James, which is, by the way, why they lost. Like, you know, like we're all talking about Brandon Staley and Patrick Mahomes, and they lost because they lost Derwin James. I feel pretty comfortable saying that. When he went off the field, Travis Kelce turned into a monster. There's a reason for that. But I think when that happened, you have a stronger case for being as aggressive as possible in every possible situation. I think, you know, last year, every time teams kicked field goals on the Chiefs, they deserved to be criticized. This year, I think there's you can kind of look at the team, look at the matchup, look at everything, you know, going into it. And it's all not always a one and a zero. Now, I think Brandon Staley was in the right because of where they were on the football field. But it's not the same. It's the Chiefs' argument that it has been in the past.
So quick recap of the cards Alabaster has been dutifully putting down here while Mina has been giving her analysis. Derwin James, yes, played only 26 snaps last night because of the hamstring thing. When he was on the field, Travis Kelce, yes, only had one catch for 14 yards, which brings me to the question that I have about the end of the game. So that play, Dominique, like when Travis Kelce just has true. Like the Mario star and just runs through like 15 people. Like, is that basically what it is? What was the strategy beyond that part of it, which I could see?
Well, I mean, the masterful defensive mind that I am, my suggestion when covering Travis Kelce, don't fall down. Like, that's what happened. The guy who was covering him ended up, like, chasing him down and being the guy. Or actually, I'm thinking about the early Travis Kelce play where he stopped on the one. The second Travis Kelce play, I think, is better explained by the way that you did, Pablo, is the Mario star. Yeah, I don't know. He turned back into 25-year-old Travis Kelce and just couldn't be stopped. Yeah, and Derwin James probably would have tackled him, if not stopped him from catching it at all.
Yeah, which then raises the question that we ask every week on schedule, is the Chiefs' offense fixed? I think my answer to that is the Chiefs' offense is not and may never be what it was last year because of the way defenses are playing them. What they are right now, however, is an offense that's still capable of hitting high highs. Like what we saw last night was that Patrick Mahomes is somewhat inconsistent, I think, compared to his MVP season, but still capable of making holy crap plays and doing it in clutch situations to win the game. With the improvement on defense, I think that's enough to make them contenders. They're not a consistent buzzsaw, but they've got a quarterback who can still make the impossible happen and a tight end who is happy to be on the receiving end of it.
So I guess the question then, just to be dutiful as well on my end here, is what do you make of the Chargers? I mean, does this feel like a team that should come away from this game feeling like, you know what? We feel good about ourselves. We did not. I mean, I guess the other question is, do we want to complain about overtime rules here, right? Because part of the calculation about how you feel if you're the Chargers is, well, you didn't give us a shot at the very end. And Justin Herbert, who was maybe playing better than Patrick Mahomes last night, he didn't get a chance to have his revenge. So how do you feel about that, Dominique? Shaking your head already?
No, I'm not the charge. If I'm the charge, I'm not walking away feeling like this was some sort of great moral victory. In large part because Derwin James is gone, but I guess he's often injured, so that's nothing to get too upset about if you're a Chargers fan. This is just, like, sadly par for the course. Like, they should be accustomed to compensating for a missing all-pro. I guess we're going to call him a safety, but he's really just an all-around awesome football player. But I do think that I require some sort of track record, and I think that's part of the reason why I still, like, fear or respect at least the Kansas City Chiefs as a threat in AFC, despite the fact that their offense is not what it once was. It's like they have a track record with guys that I know how to get it done. The Chargers don't have that. They don't even have that in recent weeks. Like they lost to the Broncos a couple weeks ago. Like they got lucky, honestly, and Chase tipped the ball back so that they could beat the Bengals. I think the other team they beat was the Giants. Like they are a young team that plays that way and fluctuates. So no, like tonight is why, or last night, while it wasn't unexpected, I wasn't surprised. I'm not ready to raise them to the upper echelon of the AFC, a place where I think that the Chiefs belong, despite the fact that they haven't been as dominant as we've come to expect them to be.
Yeah. I just don't think the Chargers are deep enough right now. You saw that they're a team where if you lose one player, it does kind of come crumbling down deep. Defense, pass rush is still inconsistent. And of course, we've talked about James. I think you feel confident at this point that you have one of the quarterbacks in the NFL, however, and that makes you feel like while you are not deep enough to believe your team is a Super Bowl contender, you also believe you can probably win any game because of that quarterback. I think that. Forget Chargers fans. Yeah. I believe that. I think the true losers of this are Broncos and Raiders fans, because holy crap. Imagine watching that game.
That division. Ugh.
Then looking at your team and just processing all of it. I would just feel terrible if I rooted for one of those teams.
Yeah, so the only knock on the Chargers, it sounds like, is that both of you guys could use some more sample size. That would help instill confidence. Incidentally, that is how I feel about the poll I posted that I mentioned earlier. I'm trailing 62 to 38, no to yes, but only 86 people have voted. So I'm going to hold out hope in the way that you might if you were the second team in AFC West.
I feel like most of the people who voted didn't see the joke.
So. No, actually, people responded 59.4% yes. They did already miss my foot joke. Majority yes, that's right. There's time for the replay, is what I'm saying, Alabaster.
Hmm. Hey, I do want to get back to the Donald Parham stuff before we move on, because we might be the only place that does.
Yeah,
fair.
Dominique, Dominique and I were talking earlier this week about how nobody seemed to care about the Vincent Jackson news that he had stage 2 CTE found dead in a hotel room earlier this year, or the fact that Philip Adams killed 6 people and was found to have severe CTE. This is all happening like in a week. And 5 years ago, this is a massive, massive NFL story, and it barely registered on the news scale. And I told Dominique, it's hard because I don't know what to say other than, hey, we should still be paying attention to it and feeling terrible about it, which is not a take. But that's something that resonated in my mind watching the scene with Donald Parham, who, of course, you know, was clearly concussed when he fell on the turf. And that was one of the scariest injuries, maybe because we saw it candidly. I'm sure there are scarier injuries right. where we don't actually see the fencing, but that was one of the that's one of the most scared I've been in a while watching football.
I think it's been interesting how our views on this have evolved to a point where we don't necessarily care about the Vincent Jackson news, but we are appalled when we see someone get hurt in a way that Donald Parham Jr. was hurt. Because 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, obviously, we are not nearly as like taken aback by these type of hits. So somehow we've gotten to a place where the NFL has conditioned us, and football in general has conditioned us to be upset when we see stuff like that, but not care so much when we see the results. And I think to the point that you were making, Pablo, is we don't know if it's those, or actually we do know that it's those big scary hits like that are not nearly as much of a problem as
the repetitive subconcussive things. On the lines.
As much as we try to make this game safer, and as someone who played the game prior to this information being public, as much as we try to make the game safer, we have to understand that this game is not safe, and we're not sure the deal that they're making, and neither are we. We're not sure what we're sending our dollars to. We're not sure how complicit we are in the things going forward, because we're not sure how much any of this affects them and how well we can protect them.
That's the key phrase, though, the bargain, right? What do you actually know in terms of medical information about the risks? Because the way I have buried a lot of this, admittedly, is the way that I bury it because I still watch boxing sometimes or MMA, right? These guys know what they're getting into, right? At the very least at this point, it has felt like the conversation has been loud enough. The movies starring Will Smith have been visible enough such that everybody kind of knows, okay, there are real harms here. And I assume that everybody just is signing up for that. They're clicking yes at the bottom of a very long terms and agreements document. And they're saying, I'm in anyway. And I think the question for all of us is whether we actually understand what's in the terms of agreement, right? Like, do we think about this? Because it is,
I think it's slightly different than that, Pablo. It's not do we understand, because lots of it is redacted. Like, we can't read it if we wanted to. Like, we don't have the information to know.
Absolutely fair.
We can't understand. And I think we could make parallels to lots of other industries where people pay a cost in order to make things easy for us or cheap for us and all that. But this one is the biggest sport and the most American thing that we have. I think that makes it slightly different and slightly more uncomfortable.
And it's not 2009 or 2010 where we truly didn't know, not only, but people were being Now there's some knowledge, but what I think is worth reinforcing going back to is while there's some knowledge and some transparency and some buy-in, and there is that terms agreement that is heavily redacted, it's still incredibly incomplete. And I don't quite know even how to talk about it, candidly, because it's so incomplete.
And the psychology of it, Mina, there's actually a parallel here to COVID to me. It's because you don't actually visibly see it.
Right.
You don't see it. It's invisible, right? The reason why a bone sticking through skin is 5,000 times more traumatizing than things that actually threaten your life, whether it be these concussions or whether it be the coronavirus, it's because your brain is actually not wired to take that as seriously visually.
I want to bring up one more thing before we move on, which is I want to hear what you guys think about the fact that we saw so much of it on the broadcast last night. I think that's part of the reason it was so chilling. Obviously, you know, I don't believe the cameraman intended to linger on him when he showed the fencing symptoms, but it was terrifying and it was a mistake. And I think they probably know that now. But I was actually, my initial reaction was, and then they showed him again shaking, accompanied by some pretty commentary about speculation.
Weather, yeah. Right.
And I want to just say this. In the moment, I said, wow, I don't want to see this. This is horrifying. It's disrespectful to him. But then later I was thinking, but we should show it. People should see this. And then I went back to, no, actually, they shouldn't, because the interest of the human being involved takes precedent over our lens. And I think it's really complicated and I'm not sure where I land on it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is, again, me being a little bit more brutish from my life around the game. Is I've seen things like this up close. I'm completely comfortable with it. I respect the idea that he deserves his privacy in that moment. That's a decision that the director has to make. Like, the cameraman's job is to get shots. If the director wants to switch off to something else, do that, fine. So it's certainly not on the cameraman. I understand your point, Mina, but I'm completely comfortable with having it be as in our face as it was that night. Yeah. Aside from the guy, if Parham's upset with it, then that's a whole nother conversation. But I want more information, not less.
I'm with you, because if that's not shown, we don't have the conversation. And it feels like the conversation in the end is important, Alabaster. So what do you have to say and add to this conversation?
Just to put a button on this, we do have an update from the Chargers, who tweeted that Donald Parham Jr. stayed overnight at UCLA Medical Center for observation after being diagnosed with a concussion. He is resting comfortably, alert, and will be discharged from the hospital later today. So a bit of good news in the end.
That is good news.
Can we get back to my poll, perhaps?
Well,
because
we can.
The winds are shifting in the electorate, I gotta say, since I shouted out voters here.
We can move on to another well-coiffed quarterback and an aggressive coach.
How do you
parse what Trevor Lawrence said about Urban Meyer's departure?
Do we have video?
Do we have it?
Yeah, we have the sound.
Okay, let's hear it.
For me, I think it's it brings a little bit of clarity to the guys in the locker room. I wouldn't say relief, but I would say it just brings some clarity and some direction moving forward. You know, we really want to go and finish this season strong. And to be honest, it's been hard the last week with everything going on. And, you know, just there's a lot of things being stirred up, I think, by the outside too. It didn't help. Made things a lot worse. But also, just everything that's going on, it's hard to be focused and have all your attention and efforts going towards winning the game when there's so many things going on. So I think, you know, I'm happy for the team that we have clarity, a sense of direction, and we can just go be our best moving forward for the next 4 weeks.
Man, I'm going to say, guys, I kind of miss Urban Meyer. Kind of miss it. Like, what's happening right now, the sound of that was the sound of somebody being savvy enough to be boring.
Yeah.
That's what that was. Urban Meyer would come out here admitting stuff. Yeah, I'm cutting guys because of a COVID test. Yeah, I don't know how free agency rules work. Yeah, I'm mad.
It's hard
at this.
To remember.
There's tampering
all
in the NFL, right? Like, there are like 50 things where he would just come out and say it. Trevor Lawrence, veteran savvy from the rookie, is like, I got this, guys. I'm going to parse words so carefully that you're not even going to know what I'm saying.
Oh, I could go. I wanted to hear Mina's take on it, but I'm happy to step in. I can't remember a time when someone who is a number one overall pick, best prospect we've seen since John Elway or Andrew Luck, a statistical bust has ever come out looking so damn good. Like, yeah. This is incredible.
He's like a fan blowing his hair in the wind, basically.
Yeah, I wasn't even amazing. I wasn't even. No, I didn't even make it though. To the hair.
The energy.
And him yeah. just yeah. looking, having just flawless skin. Like, that just was not a part of the analysis. Just in general, isn't he coming off of like a 4-interception game? And we're like, hey, that guy looks like a leader. Love to get behind that guy.
You're setting up my take perfectly, which is I actually think Trevor Lawrence is under more pressure for the remaining games than he's been under the entire NFL season. The betting line moved in the Jaguars' favor after Urban Meyer was fired. They're playing the Houston Texans. This is such an incredible opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to come out smelling like roses. If he has a big game in this one, the world writes off the entire season. And if he's bad, I don't think anyone will notice because it's the Texans. But I mean, if he's good, it's a huge story.
If he is amazing and he ends up going in the Hall of Fame, we're going to recap his career, and this is going to be chapter one. Urban Meyer derailing the early part of his career. Urban Meyer needs to take a break, go away, then go on a media campaign and say, no, this was part of the plan. You don't need an offensive line to protect your quarterback. You need an incompetent coach to protect him.
He was forced in fire, is what you're saying.
While he's developing and getting better and being terrible on the field, you need someone to go and take all the arrows for 13 games.
Yes.
Adam Gase just smashed like on that.
When there was one set of footprints, it was then that Urban Meyer was carrying you. Correct. He gave himself up for the greater good.
He just curled up into a ball to be a stepping stone. Good for you. Good for you, Urban Meyer.
Just a jacket over a puddle. Thank you, Urban Meyer, for your chivalry.
Over a puddle. That's perfect with the hair and everything. Oh, gosh.
So after, I mean, Mina, there was some real strategy here, though, in terms of how to talk about this, because I believe there was a debate, like, among the guys who were talking, like,
first team reps. I forgot about that, too. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, when they traded, they did that to ostensibly boost Gardner Minshew's value,
like,
and then traded Gardner Minshew for a sixth-rounder.
Of, like, a TV show where a bunch of crazy stuff happens, like, over the course of multiple seasons. I did that when the new Narcos Mexico came out, because I wanted to remember everything that happened the prior season, and I was like, oh,
With Succession. I'm not going to spoil Succession, but like there are like some surprising things, and then you look back over the season, like, oh no, they were breadcrumbing it the whole time. Urban Meyer has been breadcrumbing this fire since he got hired. He's just been showing us the whole time.
Admire Tom in this analogy. That's not a spoiler. That's not a spoiler.
Wow.
No one get mad at us.
Wow. No, he is not.
He's Shiv. He's Shiv. Urban Meyer is definitely
just
Shiv.
To tie a bow on this, Trevor Lawrence has always been an incredible public speaker. He was an incredible speaker in college with going on with COVID and protests.
He was
social justice, and he was, you know, and the coaches were kind of iffy on all of it. He came forward and I thought pretty eloquent on all of those matters. So I'm not surprised to see that he chose the right word here, which is clarity. Like, that is such a good value neutral word where it doesn't look like he's throwing Meyer under the bus. Like, it could not be more focus group to, and it's not. I'm sure he came out with it himself, but it's the perfect word. Perfect.
No, he focus grouped it and in his brain and came up with the word focus. Focus and clarity were the terms. They rejected relief. They were asked, hey, do you feel relief at this? They were like, no, we think it's focus, which again is just like, come on, man. That is beautiful, beautiful marketing.
I want to know how it must feel for Trevor Lawrence to be more mature than every coach he's ever played for. Like, I feel like Trevor Lawrence was more mature and more worldly and smarter than his all-time great college coach. And now he is faced with another all-time great college coach who he happens to like. I think that when people have success, obviously not I think that, I know. When people have success, we assume that they are well-rounded and reasonable individuals. But no, these football maniacs never read a book. never think about anything out or book that's not about football. Never think about anything outside of football. Don't have conversations with anybody other than other football maniacs. And Trevor Lawrence clearly has like gone to class once or twice, met a couple other people, talked about some things, and considered something other than touchdowns and interceptions.
Well, remember, Mina, he talks to Trevor Lawrence talks to his brother. And if you forgot who Trevor Lawrence's brother is, hold on. I'm going to pull up a photo of Chase just so people remember.
That was a
shocker. Chase absolutely reads books to completion and enjoys them. And I think that does help when you create a social network of people you talk to and hang out with.
I imagine that, like, in the same way that Urban Meyer is taking these arrows, like, growing up, Chase was out here protecting Trevor. Like, Chase was out here doing all the interesting, confusing, challenging, risky things, and then coming back and reporting them to Trevor so that he didn't have to put himself in that situation.
Absolutely.
I feel like
there's so many good
superstar jock quarterback needs an artsy sibling, not like another athletic sibling.
Agreed. Somebody who's definitely done psychedelics before and then talked about questioning religion afterwards, as Chase Lawrence literally has done.
He looks identical to my cousin who spent years traveling around the didgeridoo.
What?
Which is an instrument that looks like a gigantic, like it's a giant woodwind that you have to like rest on the ground. It sounds exactly like that. And in high school, he had a band called the Didgeridudes.
This is the actual, you actually have a cousin who.
Mina's cousin, debatable with your didgeridoo.
I'm not photo up, but he looks exactly like Trevor Lawrence.
Do the debatable theme song using your didgeridoo. Yeah.
I come from
Northwest people, Dominic.
I demand pictures. Oh my gosh. This
just
is
Mina
amazing.
Wearing glasses with a
can I say one other thing about the Urban Meyer thing? I actually. The obvious takeaway from this is don't hire a documented a-hole. I think that's pretty obvious. But I actually come at, like, I don't know, maybe if I'm being a little bit too prisoner of the moment with him and some of the weirdness with Matt Rhule, but I'd be pretty wary of hiring a college guy right now. Like, it is so obvious that the skills taken to succeed at that level are the management skills, the soft skills are so different from the ones it takes to succeed in the NFL. And I'm not, which isn't to say that everyone in college is incapable of making that leap, but probably a lot of them are, like, or at least have yet to prove that they can do it, Dominique.
I really think that they need to have, like, at the annual coaches summit, they should have a big coaches summit where they also have like management training for coordinators. Like they need, this is it's a very difficult job that is nothing like the jobs that they were doing before, let alone college coaches. It's very different to be a college head coach, but even being an NFL coordinator, the job that you're stepping into is entirely different than the job that you're coming from. And there's no real way to know if someone will succeed in that position or not based on the fact that they were able to coordinate a successful offense, because that tends to be the people who get hired.
Wait, I love this. I love the idea of NFL coaches having to go through rookie camp.
Yeah, like, what's wrong with
them? No, they show
NFL
rookies, Dominique. They show you how to put a condom on a banana, right? Like, they also do that for coaches, who, by the way, it turns out may also need to know that information just based on inferring, like, various things I'm learning. Like,
I think that,
all valuable.
No, you need, like, the NFL needs to hire, what's her name, Brene Brown, to teach them about being emotionally vulnerable or something. That's what's needed here.
Oh,
it's just
a session where they all cry together. Yeah,
I honestly think Chase Lawrence needs to lead this.
Yes.
He needs to teach it with his didgeridoo.
Chase Lawrence, come on debatable.
Microdose.
Oh, yeah.
Come on debatable. Those are the three action items I have for Chase Lawrence and Mina's cousin, please.
Mina's not here for your foolishness. All right. You see that?
To push this succession metaphors a little bit farther, we're going to move on from one troubled number one son to another. Are you starting to worry that Zion will never be the player you hoped he would?
If you have not been worrying about this, you have not seen Zion Williamson recently. And I say that both on the superficial level of, wow, he seems to be out of shape, but also in terms of like the articles coming out around Zion Williamson now, because he apparently had to get a biologic injection into his foot because his foot was not healing well enough. These are all like really big alarm bells for anybody who plays basketball, let alone is like, you know, supposedly somebody who relies a lot on jumping up and down as well as anybody has ever jumped up and down before. But yes, a regression in the bone, healing of his fifth metatarsal. And the question, guys, around Zion Williamson, of course, has not only been, well, can he play this season because the Pelicans are awful this season? It's about the fact that he has an extension, that he could be signing a max extension in the offseason. And now there's a question, a real question, if you're the Pelicans. Before it was, would Zion take our extension because we're the terrible Pelicans? Now it's, do the terrible Pelicans even feel comfortable enough to give Zion a five-year, $181 million contract?
Here's my question to you. Like, so Joel Embiid, this gets brought up a lot, played less basketball than Zion Williamson did during his first few years in the NBA, then comes back, he's awesome. The Sixers give him that extension, but they bake in a lot of injury protection. Do you think Zion, like, do you think that's too risky? That sort of deal, like a Joel Embiid style deal where you've got injury protection baked in for the team?
You don't have a choice. Dominique. You don't have a choice. Pay him. You have to. Like, if your goal is to win a championship or to be competitive in NBA, you need someone who is somewhere around Zion's talent and impact on the game, his ability level. You need that person. Those people are very hard to find. Figuring out a way how to help Zion stay healthy is a very difficult task. That seems easier to me than drafting another Zion or trading for another Zion. So I'm sorry, I understand the percentages, or you could make some sort of probabilities of how healthy he'll be or how many games he'll play or whatever going forward. I promise you that that probability is higher than the probability that you'll find someone as talented or more talented in the coming years to be able to come to your team and play going forward. It's a risky bet, it's a gamble, but like from a decision-making standpoint, it seems like the obvious decision is you put in all the money and then you use a bunch more money to try to figure out how you can make this career work for this man.
But this is the trick, right, Mina? Because if you're a team in a market like New Orleans or a market like Denver, for instance, right? A place, look, there are three ways to get players in the NBA. You can either draft them, as Dominique alluded to, which is a literal, you know, roll of the dice. You can sign them in free agency or you can trade for them. It's the easiest to draft them, which speaks to how hard it is to acquire them if you're in one of these sort of like mid-market places. Denver faced this question. And what Denver did with Michael Porter Jr., who had back problems very famously, was, you know what? We saw enough from him last season such that we'll give him the max extension. And he has been injured and will not play another game for them this season. That is their roll of the dice with this. If you're Zion, though, I think the other part of the math here is, keep in mind, everything we've heard out of New Orleans is that he does not want to be there in the first place, right? Like, he has been doing lovey starry eyes at New York. Him and David Griffin reportedly do not get along. So if you're the Pelicans, I don't think you really have room to negotiate with him. I think you kind of got to give him what he wants if you want to be in the Zion Williamson business. It just seems like the question of, do you want to be in the Zion Williamson business is more of a valid and open-ended question than it was even 2 days ago after this whole injection news.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of playing the odds here. You had one sort of outcome is MPJ and what happened there. And we had this conversation about Joel Embiid.
Yes, that's right.
It was not that long ago that people were saying, this dude is never going to be it. He's never going to be healthy. He's never going to play at a high level. And of course, they're wrong. And I'm not saying that's evidence that Zion is going to go that route that Embiid did, but there really are two paths that you could go in. And I think Dominique's point is important because you've got those two paths and then you've got the alternative, which is starting over again and hoping that you find a generational one. So you're basically weighing a roll of the dice in the draft versus a roll of the dice on a known quantity when healthy. And I would take that bet over rebuilding just based on what we've seen from Zion. I think finished second ever in player efficiency for a 20-year-old. I mean, it's been a minute.
It was crazy.
It's crazy, but it feels like it didn't happen based on the discourse right now. And I think a lot of it has visually we see him. He doesn't look like he's never really looked like a typical NBA star. And that makes people concerned, I would say, even more than the injury on some level.
whatever decision they make, or if I were in that situation, you know what decision I would make. But let's say I got put on either side of that. Like, if the worst case scenario happened in either decision, like, I'm more comfortable with the worst case of me signing Zion and him never playing substantively going forward than I would be with me letting him go and being an all-star somewhere else. Like, forget me even starting over. Like, him going somewhere else and being a league MVP in 5 years. Like, stay here and have an awful career. Don't go somewhere else and be amazing. Like, that is the worst possible.
I guarantee, and this would be sort of a test of whose karma is worse here, but I guarantee the New York Knicks would trade everything for Zion Williamson right now. Even despite every caveat, Alabaster. Alabaster, you also did try to interject, so...
Yeah, just to pour some cold water on the Embiid comparisons. Embiid in his de facto rookie season made the 76ers, as Pablo, I'm sure you know, 12.7 points per 100 possessions better when he was on the floor. Zion was around 7 for his career, and the big difference being Joel Embiid is an amazing defensive player. Zion hemorrhages points when he's on the floor.
Yeah.
Thanks, cold water.
Yeah, I mean, well, but, you know, we're I agree. Not saying Joel Embiid is better than Zion Williamson.
Yeah,
I agree.
Joel Embiid is better than Zion.
But
Zion Williamson
don't know.
Is still a superstar. Joel Embiid is one of the 5 best players in the NBA. You know.
Yeah, I just
healthy
don't know
Zion why. Is has the potential to be a top 10, 15 player, no doubt.
No, I mean, it all reminds me of that famous saying, right? Tomorrow is not guaranteed. The past is history. The present. Oh, no, I messed it up. The present is
next
a
topic,
gift.
Please.
That's why they call it. Oh, no. Now is a gift. That's why they call it the present. Wise words.
I'm good on
wise words.
You're like, you know what that reminded me of? When they put a quote from Justin Herbert during the game last night, and it was like a Socrates quote or something. They were like, Justin Herbert. I don't know why that.
Fool me once. Shame on me. Fool me twice.
It was the more I learn, the more I know nothing. Justin Herbert. This is like the Michael Squad Gretzky thing. All right. Anyways, keep going.
All right, guys, you guys ready for whodunit? We'll give you quotes.
Sure.
You tell us whodunit. First quote. Anything with the player behind it, I'm the best in the world. And your choices are A, Bo Jackson, B, Michael Jordan, C, Scottie Pippen, or D, Anthony Edwards?
I heard this one. Yeah. I do know this
one. Oh, I didn't hear it. I just knew it was Anthony Edwards.
I'm cheating, but yeah, you're right.
Statistically speaking, it is also Anthony Edwards, Alabaster. Final answer, yes.
The thing about Anthony Edwards in this is because he's such an obvious troll, no one is mad at him. Like, you know what I mean? It's one thing.
I don't think he is a troll, Mina. I don't think he is. I think Anthony Anderson or
believes
Anthony Edwards,
all of it.
Yeah, is being completely genuine. I don't think that's a troll move. Like, you've heard him talk before. The man is dripping confidence, and I love it.
Didn't he say he could beat Michael Phelps in the pool or something? I love that. Was
Anthony,
my favorite one.
Anthony Edwards came into the NBA saying before the draft that he didn't really like basketball.
He was like a really
great
football player.
And he went number
player,
one
right?
overall. Apparently he is great at backflips, bowling, hockey, baseball, tennis, swimming, lacrosse, golf, cooking food, and trash can ball if you listen to Anthony Edwards.
The one, so he said hockey. That's the one you got to be careful with. I did a story, I want to say 3 years ago, on Jalen Ramsey, and he said a bunch of things that made a lot of people mad about other quarterbacks. But nobody got as mad as hockey players because he said – if you gave him 6 months, he'd be in the NHL. And hockey, the hockey community does not take cut to diminishing their accomplishments. That's how they viewed it. I think it did end with him going to a Predators game, though, and being like an honorary captain. So, it could work out for you.
I want to see that version of the Blind Side, personally. Is that how Damian Woody, by the way, wound up an Islanders fan? Is that how that happened? Oh, I still don't know what the deal is with that.
Why couldn't he just have grown up an Islanders fan?
He just is an Islanders fan. Yeah,
it's a weird thing, huh? You can't wrap your head around it.
Cut that part out of the podcast. Next question.
I don't see color.
What?
Do you guys want to hear from Anthony Edwards? Do we have a sound?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony's the best baseball player, football player, skier, curler. Walker, runner.
Anything with a player behind it, I'm the best in the world.
Oh, my God.
Wow, from off screen.
Yeah.
I want to revise. He's not a troll. He's like impish. Like he's such a, he's like a Loki type, you know, bringing some
a trickster god, if you will.
Yeah, he is. Like, so I think nobody's angry at it because it's so, he might believe it. You're right, Dominique, but it feels good natured. I don't think the Jalen Ramsey comments were similarly good natured or received that way.
That's an interesting thing to dissect. Like, I'm trying to think quickly. I can't figure it out right now, but what has Anthony Edwards done? Because he's not that different from many of the people who are hated for doing these same things. I'm not sure what he's done.
Yeah, in fact,
very funny.
In some ways, he's the opposite of Loki, though, because Loki, like, there's a multiverse of Lokis in which they're all good at different sports.
Spoilers.
No, it's too late. No. They've already moved on to Hawkeye. Like, if you haven't watched Loki, you're good.
I have not seen the newest Hawkeye. But, no, Anthony Edwards is not Loki because he is... No, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Because he's all the people in one at the same time in this universe, Alabaster.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like calling him Loki is an insult. Like, Loki is kind of a sneaky trickster. Anthony bangs right on people. There is nothing sneaky about that.
Loki never killed Yuta Watanabe. Yeah,
when
Anthony
he smiles, he has a glint, or when he makes these comments, he has a glint in his eye. Okay. I don't know why. I can't explain it. But when you see him, you just smile and laugh no matter what out of his mouth. That's how I feel about Anthony Edwards.
Oh, glinty eye. Got it.
Yep, 40-inch vertical, high glint factor.
It's like the implicit motor. Wink.
to quote our buddy Dave Jacoby, Anthony Edwards is the definition of a guy. It doesn't matter what you say, it's how you say it.
There you go. Perfect.
Messenger, not message.
And moving on to the next one. This one might be about the messenger. I'm ready. Let's do this. I can hand off to Chubb and throw screens all game. Ha ha! And your choices are Johnny Manziel, Brandon Whedon, Brady Quinn, or Tim Couch.
Ha ha.
I think I haven't heard from Brady Quinn since he defended Urban Meyer.
So, did he do that?
Rule him out.
Yeah, he did.
The one person.
It was a conspiracy against Urban Meyer, is I believe Brady Quinn's take on all of that.
No. Okay.
Deep fix.
So this could be any of the other three. Whedon doesn't really talk much, so it'd be one of the other two. I feel like if it was Manziel, I would have gone viral, so I'm gonna go Tim
Manziel.
Couch.
Yeah, like Manziel's Couch. A big LOL guy. I feel like he's not saying haha, typing it out in text.
That's
right?
A great point.
That's an older move.
Older, yeah.
And so that, Tim Couch does seem reasonable by that standard. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey guys, should the refs play this game?
Oh, good question. At latest count, they had how many positives? Like 20, somewhere between 20 and 25.
And Baker's not happy about the testing regimen either.
Mina, we taped an episode of Around the Horn yesterday where the quote we had to analyze was, thank God for Case Keenum. And my entire answer was, thank God for Case Keenum, absolutely, because everyone else has COVID. And then as soon as the episode airs, 5 minutes in, Case Keenum contracts the coronavirus. So not great for Cleveland.
More importantly, not great for your take. Your take.
Not great for my it was I got my mentions were full of Case Keenum Hive. Just
hey, we did it.
Tim Couch on Twitter.
Nailed it.
At Tim Couch QB. I'm ready. Yeah. That's not verified though, so maybe an imposter.
Schemes though, not screens.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's the last time I remember hearing Tim Couch's name was he's swole now. That was like a few years ago.
Tim Couch is swole now.
Really?
It's great. Deltoids? What those are? Deltoids?
I'm trying
Tim
to let it...
on his couch.
oh, gosh. That was Pablo-level terrible. Pabloian.
How do I catch fire for something that I didn't even say?
I don't know.
I thought it was pretty good. Wait. Dominique, tell me if they should play the game, because I got...
Actually, Pablo would have said, Tim, come over to my couch, would have been Pablo's line. Something along those lines. I'm sorry, Mina, I take it back.
But truly, I actually do need a take on whether they should play this game. And I am in a position now where I don't feel comfortable giving takes on this COVID stuff. Because in society, we don't know what the heck to do. Like, I am not sure if I should be having dinner with people. So I don't feel comfortable saying whether or not this testing regimen works, whether or not the rules make sense, whether or not any of this should still be going on. It's all very confusing to me. Not people tune into the show, right? To hear me just say I don't know stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it does. But it does feel, though, like, look, and this is to get to the larger conversation about how to feel about this should go to dinner tonight, all the stuff that I'm also contemplating. It does feel like, how is the hospital in the area doing, right? Like, are we jeopardizing hospital beds? Can people actually get medical services? Because we know the reality of this per the NFL. Again, it's fascinating, right? Sports is conducting this. They're conducting these experiments with a level of transparency that we don't see in other parts of American life. We have a bunch of vaccinated human beings who are tracked. Statistics are provided. They're tracking which kind of variant they're getting. And what we're learning is that, thankfully, the vaccines work insofar as they're not being hospitalized, like, at all. I believe there's one hospitalization in 2 years, I think. Omicron seemingly is not going to put people into the hospital. And so it is about, like, community spread. Are we part of the problem for those who need access to hospitals? And that specific question, unfortunately, I also don't know the answer to. So I could also use help on that take.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you anything because you guys said all the stuff that I was thinking. I don't know. Get vaccinated, get boosted, and I don't know. Follow some guidelines. That's all I could say because there was a time early in this where it seemed pretty clear what we should be doing. It doesn't feel very clear anymore, especially with the changing of the impacts and all that stuff. I'm getting closer to saying something that I don't feel comfortable even saying, so I'm going to stop talking.
Something Baker Mayfield did not do when he called out all the COVID protocols on Twitter yesterday.
Baker Mayfield needs to go to Chase Lawrence's school also.
We have talked a lot today, so we only have room for one more topic.
What?
Talked a lot. A little subtle disdain in that. A little bit of an implied.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, last topic. If the Colts beat the Pats this weekend, then blank.
Dan Orlovsky is going to strut into the studio on Monday is the actual answer.
Then Carson Wentz would have only thrown the ball 12 times. So that would be a very short strut. That would be a tiny little baby step strut.
He's got those long legs, though. He can make up a lot of ground.
I think that would require somebody to beat the Patriots at the Patriots game, which is good defense and a running game. It's hard for me to imagine that this team can beat them at that particular game. Because although Wentz is playing better, I'm not ready to go that far. It's possible they could win. I think the difference is the style of defense that they play. I like the Patriots style because honestly, their style is a lot more malleable and flexible to a game plan than the Colts is.
I would say this.
Yeah, that's a great point. Oops, sorry.
Can I give you my less educated football answer? And I'll speak about this as somebody who has to talk about football in the future. If the Colts beat the Pats this weekend, then it's going to be a lot harder to like feel like there's a Goliath in the NFL, right? I mean, maybe it's the Chiefs, sure, but they just played the Chargers in overtime. The Patriots were the team that everyone felt good about, feeling good about. Like, yeah, they're back. And if it's not them beating the Colts this weekend, then it feels open to an actually like detrimental extent to me.
I think that's true in the AFC. I would say in the NFC, I feel like the Packers and Bucks have kind of separated themselves, but I absolutely agree with you. In the AFC, there's like an astounding lack of, to use Trevor Lawrence's favorite word, clarity. And I think the Pats losing would cloud that picture even more. I am fascinated by this game. Pats, Colts, quarantine, please, for the love of God, don't see any other human beings. I just went blurry. Because I really, really want to see this football game. I'm really, really interested in this coaching. I think these are two head coaches that are very, very smart. But Dominique, I thought, made an excellent point. The Colts defense, we know what they do. They're going to play cover two. They're going to play a lot of zone. They're not going to blitz. They're going to try to keep stuff in front of them. We know that. Question is, okay, well, can the Patriots, can Mac Jones attack those zones? You know, I think they can. I think it'll be interesting. It really comes down to whether or not he turns it over. But on the other side of the ball, huge question mark how Bill Belichick approaches this game. Because I think there's one school of thought that playing the Colts, you want to allocate extra resources to stopping the run. I don't think Bill Belichick thinks that way. I think he is going to be perfectly content to let the Colts run the ball between the 20s, but he is not going to let them beat him through the air. I could be wrong. I'm curious to see, but yeah. I love Bill Belichick, interesting defense games, and I think this is one of those.
Yeah, I think that that's a smart strategy. You're right. I think the instinct is to pile the box and make Carson Wentz beat you. But I think when you do that, you open yourself up to high variance plays, like a deep pass interference or one big play, which doesn't require as much effectiveness from Carson Wentz. I think if you want to make Carson Wentz beat you, then what Mina's saying is right. Keep everything in front of you. Once they get in the red zone, then they're not going to be able to run it in from there. There's not going to be a lot of field for them to run stretching plays to give Carson Wentz room. Then that's when you kind of put the pressure on him. He's going to have to convert on third downs or fourth downs. He's going to have to throw into tight windows. That's the thing. As long as you keep them from having big runs, and as much as we think packing the box stops the run, it does, but it also opens you up to big plays in the running game, in the passing game. So if you do load up the box, there's going to be a free person to make the tackle. If that person misses the tackle on Jonathan Taylor, he's out. He's out the gate. Whereas if you try cover two or something like that, yeah, maybe he's going to get four. Maybe he's going to get eight. He might get 10. But with two safeties back and a four or a six or a two, they're going to corral him before he gets 35-40 on it.
And they're fast. Those pass safeties are fast, man. Yeah. Like Kyle Duggar, who's back for this game, they will be happy to use him to stop explosive Jonathan Taylor runs. Dominique, you're so smart. I love it when we agree.
You are too. I enjoy when we can have a nice,
right,
deep
guys?
Football conversation.
Me too, Pablo. I meant to say you're both of you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Pablo, you're smart too.
I inferred that. Love these conversations that we have where I also say things that are smart about football.
When can I come on your podcast again, Mina? You am I banned?
I didn't want to ask you because you've been so busy. You got...
Yeah, I thought I got shadow
banned. You know, Dominique,
I've been on the podcast.
I've been
feeling bad asking you.
People haven't been able to listen to it because
you're
big
right.
Tech is preventing us from actually seeing your work.
I didn't want to go on your podcast until today when we had another one of our smart conversations. And on your podcast, guess what? We won't get interrupted at all by anybody.
Wow.
Pablo, you can also come
ever. So, unfortunately, I believe it's 38%. But there's still time. About a second. Nope. Now there's no more time.
Close. This is fun. Enjoy your weekends, guys.
Be safe. Thanks, Ryan. I love you.
What? What does that have to do with anything?
You know.